The needs of grandma and the Olympic athlete differ by degree, not kind.
What I'm trying to do is start challenging the belief that you can't load medically complex individuals.
We really need to think about, we want to keep people safe. We want to, you know, be very thoughtful in our exercise prescription, but we also need to think about the risk of underdosage, the risk of the underdosed seated TheraX routine with that yellow TheraBand. What happens if I continue on with that when I could have been squatting or deadlifting or doing a loaded carry and getting that person, you know, back to their prior level of function or before? Like, their time is of the essence. It can be rather urgent.
Podcast designed to help you change your mindset and your life.
It is time for something new.
Join host Dr. Shante Cofield, also known as the Movement Maestro, on a journey to see the bigger picture.
Open your eyes.
Find your passion.
And discover how movement unites us all.
Let's get it popping.
This is Maestro on the Mic. I'm the Maestro, and you're about to get maestrified.
3, 2, 1.
Hey guys, Maestro here, coming at you live with another episode of Maestro on the Mic. Today I have with me not one, but two special guests. I have owner, I want to say Doc McFunkins again.
You're allowed to.
I have owner Dustin Jones and partner Christina Previtt. They work for Jero's Health. They founded, created this thing, and I knew immediately that I had to bring them on. I'm going to leave it to them to explain exactly what it is, but just know that their mantra is making it easy for you to better serve older adults. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Justin and Christina. Thanks for hopping on, guys.
Yeah, no problem.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It's cool to get to talk to you in, I guess not real life, but over the internet, because I see all your stories.
More real.
Yeah, it's all the stuff you do on social media. So it's cool to see you're a real person and get to chat with you.
All right, both of us. Speaking of, this guy, we're trying to start the podcast and he was like, oh wait, I have to do a story. So I love it. That's where we connected. It's the best freaking platform out there. Sure. So Doc McFunkins, can we hop on in and can you tell the people what exactly Jero's is?
Okay, so Jero's, I'll go back to the beginning, the birth story, if you will. That may be helpful.
Yes.
So I am a physical therapist. I've been working in the field since 2011. Started off with kind of a fitness ortho background, and then found myself in working in a nursing home, and then also home health. And that setting, as a lot of people may know that have heard of home health, it can be challenging and very isolating. And at that time, no one on the internet was really speaking to those types of clinicians or speaking to how to really serve older adults well. All the content and material was about, you know, the 17-year-old female soccer athlete coming back from her ACL surgery, for example. And so there was a problem, and I was really struggling in my work, so I decided to create a podcast to be able to talk to really smart people. So that was called Senior Rehab Project. Christina Previtt, at that time, was starting to pursue her PhD. She was coaching in a CrossFit box and created this class of mainly older adults. And I was really intrigued by what she was doing. She was one of the first few people that I had on to interview. And so fast forward a few years, we decided to rebrand to Jero's Health to really encompass more of what we're about. We're really trying to promote health, and sometimes that's outside of the rehab sphere or rehabilitation.
Yeah.
We were finding more and more fitness professionals in our community group, our Facebook group, and listening to the podcast and interacting online. So we decided to rebrand. And at that time, Christy and I have been teaching courses together with the Institute of Clinical Excellence, and she came on board as a partner. And so, yeah, that's the quick and dirty. What would you add to that, Christina? Am I missing anything?
No, just that we ended up being on a podcast together, met each other at an aging conference in Louisville, and 3 years later, we've met each other, significant others and children, and it's just amazing the power of the internet to start creating change and allowing these conversations to happen. It's kind of fun when you look back on it.
It's crazy. It's kind of awkward, you know, when I tell my parents this stuff, they're like, wait, so you're traveling to the middle of nowhere, Wyoming, to teach a course with this woman from Canada that you've only met twice. And I'm like, yeah, exactly.
It sounds totally fine to me. Yes, it's 100% what is happening. Christina, can you tell the folks a little bit about your background, your company? I mean, all of this is pretty fascinating to me.
Yeah. So like Dustin said, when I jumped on to the then Senior Rehab Project for the first time, I was starting a class in a CrossFit gym called the Boomers Program, because what was happening in my practice is that I had a strong strength and conditioning background. So I would see some of my older clients would do a fairly structured strength and conditioning program with them, would try to ease symptoms. I would discharge them. They would go through a period of deconditioning and then they would be back in my caseload. And to me, that didn't really make very much sense. And so I wanted to have this continuing, more prevention-focused exercise program for people who may need a little bit more medical attention or modification. And so as I was starting this program and seeing amazing results, I thought, you know, I need to do a PhD in this area, because we need to have more research that supports a very preventative approach to geriatric care. And so I went, And so I went into my PhD in 2015. I'm still doing it on a part-time basis. And then as I started, you know, doing these randomized controlled trials, starting to get into the research, I saw that, you know, we have a lot of research on the benefits of exercise for older adults, and something that is along the continuum of life, but it's not necessarily translating into practice. And so my husband and I, we started a physiotherapy gym hybrid up here in Kingston, Ontario. I'm in Canada. And so it's called Stave Off, and it stands for Strength Training, Aging, Vitality, and Energy. And it's also around prevention, so staving off chronic conditions, staving off loss of functional resiliency over time. And so there's a very preventative focus and a focus on healthy aging, as well as one-on-one PT that's kind of the basis of our business model. And now Stave Off is partnering with Jaros to try and help other clinicians get into more preventative healthcare strategies. So really exciting stuff.
So good. Was it difficult for you to, actually two questions. One, what age group or ages are you working with? So I know, you know, there's so many different words out there now to be like more PC and like the advanced aging population, things like that. What kind of demographic, what age are you specifically working with? Ages, I should say, are you specifically working with? And was it hard for you to get patients, clients?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I would say that we tend to focus on the 50 plus. So we have a lot of people who are coming in who don't necessarily want to go to seniors exercise programs because it's not challenging enough, just because of some systems level issues and the amount of, you know, supervision that you can have based on funding models, et cetera, et cetera. You can get into a whole other tangents with that. But so we try and get people into our programming a little bit before that. So we try and get into group exercise programs for people who we've started with specifically targeting arthritis, and we've kind of expanded our scope from there. So I would say 50 to 85 tends to be my jam demographic. And in terms of how we're outreaching with them, you know, people think that some of our older clients aren't on social media, but that is not true. And we've had a lot of success with targeting community workshops and things through Facebook, actually. And,
yeah,
you know, because the younger demographic, they scroll through Instagram and Facebook so fast. But my clients who are in their 50s, they read their Facebook posts.
What?
I know.
I don't even know how to do that anymore.
Like, wait, there's a caption?
No.
The cap is too long. What's the hashtag? TLDR, too long, don't read.
This is amazing. I didn't even think about that, but that makes total sense. That yes, they are on social media, just a different platform than many of us may be used to, you know, doing so much on Instagram. And that is phenomenal. Phenomenal. Doc McFunkin.
Yo.
Can I ask you a question? So you guys are listening. I'm calling him Doc McFunkin. So right now we're using Zencastr as the recording platform. And when I signed on, there was another name in the room, and it was Doc McFunkins. And that's actually Dustin's official. It's his given name, but he goes by Dustin to seem more formal, apparently. So can you talk to us a little bit about the transition from kind of the nursing home setting or the SNF setting? Because a lot of the people listening, not a lot, but I know more people going into travel PT, and a lot of the placements are SNFs. You know, can you just talk to them about that experience transitioning and just anything around that?
Yeah. So that was actually a travel placement. So it started off as a 13-week contract and ended up being, I added a couple months to that. So it was interesting for me because I was in an outpatient orthopedic setting working with younger individuals, a lot of runners, and that kind of suited a lot of my background in athletic training and CSCS and all that fun stuff. So I went from there to the nursing home in Romney, West Virginia, which is the middle of freaking nowhere in my home state. And so in my mind, it was a tough period, and I felt like I was at the bottom of my career. You know, it was a really dark place, very low place in my life. I was like, well, crap, I'll just take this position and make some money and then, you know, get on with life and go to the next gig or wherever that would be. And so I did not go into it with a great perspective whatsoever. I did not enjoy working with older adults. It was, it was not a good situation. But then after I spent a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks there, I was really starting to enjoy myself. And I think part of that was just the culture. You know, a lot of the people in this nursing home, there was one room where these two women, they were 92, 93 years old, that were living together. Gosh. And they freaking rode a horse to elementary school together. Like, it was like that sense of community where people go so far back, and everyone adopted me into that family. So that was really amazing. But then also I out of my ignorance, I was doing a lot of the things that I was doing with the folks in the outpatient orthopedic clinic with some of these patients. Granted, it did not always go well, which Christina's heard all my terrible stories.
Tell us, please, at least one real talk for the people.
So the classic one, the one that I probably share the most, this is pretty early on. I was seeing a patient. I did not evaluate them, but the other travel therapist was gone. So I was taking over this person, and they had been doing kind of the general like seated therapeutic exercise routine with, you know, some random colored TheraBand that was available that day. Yep. And to this day, you know, that still makes my blood pressure boil and raise tremendously. So I was like, all right, we're going to get this woman up on her feet. Like she obviously can do some activities in standing. That's obviously going to be better for her than just sitting there and just flinging a rubber band all over the place. So we started to do some sit to stands from the treatment table, and we started pretty high, and she was just crushing it, like just freaking knocking it out. She got to the point within session where it changed some positioning and whatnot. She got up without using her hands for the first time, which is a big deal.
Oh.
And it's like, all right, well, let's lower the table. Still crushing it. It's like, okay, let's load it. So I give her, it was like a 2 or 3 pound dumbbell, nothing crazy. And we did, I don't know how many squats we did that day, but we did a ton. Good session. She was super encouraged. She leaves, I leave home, I felt great, and she was first on my caseload the next day. So I walk in and go to her room to take her to the gym, and she wasn't there. It's like, oh, shit. And so I go to the nurse's station, like, hey, where's Betty? Betty is in the hospital. And if this has happened to any therapist, you know, oh my God, what did I do to this person? Like, did I kill them?
Your heart.
Did I call? Oh, my whatever. God. Betty was there. Betty was not a real name, but she was held under observation, brought back to the nursing home later that day. And that's where I found out that she actually called 911 from her phone, like didn't even try to get the nurse in the nursing home, called 911 because her legs were hurting. Because she had delayed onset muscle spasms.
Because she had, she was so...
So I freaking sent someone to the emergency room for DOMS, and it was pretty quick onset, you know, like to have it the next, like early that morning, like that's pretty legit. And so, sooner the freaking ER and the doc was like, you know, just making an absolute, you know, clown of me, the therapist at the nursing home, and then sent her back. And
oh no. How did she respond to that afterwards, though?
Not great. I mean, I did not salvage that situation.
She never come
right,
back to me. We worked too
and
hard.
So that's been kind of the story of my life, is just having those mistakes and those failures and learning from them. Like, okay, maybe I should have set the expectations clearly. You know, let her know you may have a little bit of of some hurt that's not necessarily harm. That's a good, you know, just kind of lay out that expectation on the front end. And I didn't do that. And so yeah, but it did not go well afterwards. But I think that's helped me down the road, you know, with other folks that I've seen.
Can I interrupt 1 second and just, I actually would love for you to extrapolate on that a bit, because I feel like when we're working with different generations, people have different backgrounds, different experiences, and some people just aren't, they didn't grow up exercising. Mm-hmm. They didn't grow up doing these things. And so, like you said, someone gets soreness. They've never done anything in their whole life. They're like, I'm dying, or they just don't want to do this. What kind of verbiage were you using to set the stage and manage expectations and kind of get people on board with doing some stuff? And same question for you after, Christina.
Yeah, I think this is a problem that is not going to be as big of an issue just because we've done such a good job of exercise, like literally so many folks, you know, they know it's good for them. For me, the folks that I work with, which, you know, Christina's mainly 50 to 85. I'm mainly 85 and up, just working in the home health setting. And so a lot of these folks, they may have heard exercise has been helpful, but they don't necessarily do it. So the big thing that I try and do is really connect what these exercises are going to do for them in relation to their own goal that they set. So for some folks, you know, it may be, you know, be able to walk with their great grandchild, for example. So I'll show them, hey, this is, you know, these weighted lunges are really going to help you, you know, be a little more stable on your feet when you're, you know, walking with your great granddaughter, for example. So really try and get to their motivations and tie that exercise to them, because it's hard for them to see why that stretchy band seated exercise routine is actually going to help them on their feet, you know? So that's one. Yeah. And then two, like I said before, just setting those expectations to know, all right, that you may be a little sore, you know, kind of poke around, like that may be a little tender, but you know, you didn't hurt yourself. That's actually a good thing. That's a sign that we're probably going to get some good adaptations. Like that's kind of what we want. We want to push it hard and you're going to recover and you're going to get better. But then also give them realistic expectations that, you know, there may be a regression and we can work around that. We're going to modify this exercise to where you can do it without pain, or we'll try this other activity so you can continue to progress with your strength, with your fitness, because regressions are pretty common, especially and with the folks that I work with. So kind of setting the stage, setting clear expectations, and really getting to their desires and motivations and connecting the interventions to that.
It makes total sense. Christina, you got anything to add to that?
Yeah. So I think as we're seeing differences in generations, you know, the people that Dustin are seeing, their functional exercise program was actually doing functional exercise. You know, like that was their job. Like they were doing very heavy manual labor or like the things that they were doing around the home.
Yeah.
As we're starting to see more sedentary job positions where most people are spending, you know, 8-9 hours a day sitting and then going home and sitting, I think as a whole healthcare system, we've done a good job of realizing how important it is to reduce sedentary behavior and increase exercise. So I find that the conversations that I'm having with my 80 plus clients are different than my 50 plus. And so my 50 plus clients were usually treating some sort of orthopedic pain point, but I'm also trying to set the stage saying, you know, the more strength you have now, the more likely you are to be, you know, traveling in your 70s rather than being unable to get out of your home in your 70s, you know, setting up the wants and desires in retirement and, you know, trying to maintain that for as long as possible. So the conversations I'm having are definitely a kind of similar to Dustin, like trying to tie back to wants and desires, but probably in a slightly different way.
Man, have you taken marketing classes? That is marketing like 101. They're so good. Here's a problem. I have a solution. Here's what it looks like if you don't follow my solution. And that's so good. This is amazing. I love what you guys are doing. It's definitely not my population, which is why I'm even more appreciative and grateful for what you're doing, because, you know, this population needs to have appropriate and high quality care. So
I want to bring up a point, if you don't mind, about what Christina said. And this is something that, especially in her business where she is, you know, selling her services, most of the time I show up to people's houses, whether they want me to or not. So I do need to sell my service, but Christina really does. And she talked about this a lot where, you know, she's not necessarily going to speak to prevention. She's going to speak to performance.
Absolutely.
So not trying to say, okay, if you come to Stave Off and sign up for 3 months of the Conquer Fitness program, you're going to prevent a fall by X percent. Like, she's not saying that. She's going to say, you're going to be a badass. You're going to be able to play with your grandkid. Yes. You're going to be able to take that trip to Italy and be able to walk 10 miles a day and see all the sights and blah, blah, blah. So she, performance over prevention all day long.
All you guys listening, write that down. Performance over prevention all day long. Doesn't matter what demographic you're working with. I see this so much on social media. Like, if you don't do this, then you're going to have this pain, and then just make people badasses. Mm. I had that Kathy Sierra episode, and that's what she's done so well. Make your patients, your clients, your customers, whoever's coming to you, show them how you can make them badass, now they can make themselves badass. Doesn't matter what age that is. Yes, that is awesome, Dustin. Awesome.
One of the things.
Can we circle?
Sorry, can go I ahead, just say one more thing?
No, not sorry. Go.
More that you know Dustin and I, the more that we go off on tangents about certain things. So this is definitely great. One of them.
Keep on going.
I connected with one of the health units in my city, and they said, "Will you donate your space? We want to do a health prevention day for a community outreach initiative." And I said, "Sure, no problem." But in the back of my mind, I said, how many people, unless they're having recurrent falls, are really thinking about falls and trying to avoid them, right? Like, what's our messaging there?
Yeah.
There was maybe one person who showed up, and they had dietitians and people who did orthotics and all these type of people. And we literally stood there because nobody is thinking, like, I want to do a falls prevention screen. That wouldn't be something that they would take time out of their day. So I would never do a falls prevention workshop. I would do a let's get you traveling to Europe workshop.
Mm. Yes. Doesn't that just sound better? I'm like, sign me up. Okay, good. I'm in. I'm flying to Canada so I can do this. Like, it's so good. You guys, that is a huge marketing lesson right there. Like, so, so big, especially in our profession. Something I speak about all the time. This is resonates so, so hard with my messaging. So thank you both of you for just hammering that home, and now across the lifespan.
Yeah. And when we were at CSM a couple of years ago, the APTA said that a third of outpatient orthopedic clients are going to be over the age of 65, irrespective of the area.
Dang.
So you're definitely marketing to this age group, whether you think you are or not.
Yes, exactly. You're going to work with them, especially if you go into that. Everyone comes out of school and they're like, oh, I'm going to work with athletes and and then you go to your job and you're like, these are not the people I was thinking of. But it's like, this is who you're going to be working with. And so understand, one, how to speak to them, and two, how to help them appropriately, right? And efficiently, effectively. Dustin, can we go back? And I just want to finish your discussion about your transition from the sniff, sadness to older population happiness.
Oh, just kind of the how that panned out
in general, how'd that pan out, and things like China changes you had to make, or what happened along the way.
So after that travel placement, I was dating, now married to a lovely woman, Megan Jones. She was starting her emergency medicine residency in Columbus, Ohio. She was in medical school, and then she was moving to Columbus. So I'm there with her. So I left that travel placement, went to Columbus. And at that time, I still had the desire of being that kind of, I wanted to be a doc in a box, basically. I was a big K-Star fan partnered with
all of
us. Exactly.
and was
working in a fitness facility, MoveNat, Ohio, and then it moved to MoveStrong Kettlebells, basically kettlebell gym. And I was trying to see patients out of there, but then also had the reality of debt and then also medical school debt and just all of that fun stuff. So I thought, how could I make the most money, and how could I have a flexible schedule so I could still spend a lot of time in the gym? And home health fit the bill. So it was not a very altruistic decision. It was all practicality, money, flexibility. And as the longer I spent in that setting, the less I spent time in the gym, and the more I was driving around to people's homes. And now I feel like I'm swinging back to being in the gym more and more, and less in people's homes. But I just really fell in love with it. going around to different parts of Columbus and meeting different types of people and actually going into their home. And it was just a huge cultural lesson for me, especially because I grew up in West Virginia and, you know, you don't get exposed to too much, you know, just being in that place. And a lot of, I just didn't get a lot of diversity, exposure. And so this was like a crash course to cultural competency 101. And I just fell in love with it. And the folks were great and really tinkered more and more with some of these activities or exercises I was working with or using with a more, you know, active or athletic population and just learning, okay, I should probably reduce this range of motion so they're not going to hate me the next day. Or, okay, I think they're good to go on, you know, let's get that 35-pound kettlebell instead of the 26-pound kettlebell. Just tinkering and learning mainly from mistakes and just really fell in love with it. And as that was going on, the podcast was going, I was talking to just thought leaders in the JPT world, you know, every week. And that fueled a lot of that curiosity. It also helped that I was basically a bachelor. My wife was never home, you know, always at the hospital. Mm-hmm. So life was conducive to it back then. But yeah, that kind of was that transition. And it was a hectic and crazy period of life, but a fun period of life for sure.
In terms of, because you kind of teased or touched on this, in terms of the things that you're able to do with these people, especially when you're doing your home visits, because I see this on social media. You guys listening, you know, I'm always talking about Sammy Black Sox. If you follow him on Instagram, Sam Hodes PT, I'll link it. He's always doing just really creative things, and he's like doing sled pushes, aka let's put something in your wheelchair and then you push it. And that, you know, I'm like, this is so creative. In terms of the things that you're able to do with your patients, and perhaps people that are listening to this that are like, oh, I don't want to go into home health because it's so limiting, what would you say?
Repeat that question again for me.
In terms of exercises and stuff that you're able to do with them, like, I feel like kind of the sky is the limit. Is there certain things that you're like, these are my go-tos, this is kind of like, just anything you can speak to about the exercises? And yeah. I feel like from what I'm hearing from you, it's not nearly as limiting as one would.
Yeah, not at all. So I like to refer to a Greg Glassman quote. He's the creator of CrossFit. So yes. I'm going to butcher this, but
I already know what you're going to say.
So the needs of grandma and the Olympic athlete differ by degree, not kind. And that there sums it all up for me. That we don't need to be doing different types of activities or exercises for these people. Like, they're not another species. Like, they are human beings. And me, the 33-year-old, is going to benefit from the same type of stimulus that the 88-year-old is going to benefit from. Yeah, we need to accommodate for the medical complexities and the medications that they're on and the changes that we do see with aging. But it's a matter of degree, not kind. And so scaling, range of motion, intensity, rest time, where you place weights, just all these different factors that a lot of us think about already, you just apply them to these folks and you can get them to do a sled push, for example, or a squat or a deadlift or a loaded carry. So that, I think that's what I would say that question. Yeah. Christina probably has a much more scientific and smart sounding answer, so I'll let her speak to that too.
I'm just gonna start using a bunch of sentences that have 4 or 5 syllable words.
Yeah,
just to make myself sound,
she's the smart one. If it's not obvious, she's Miss PhD, very intelligent, and I'm like the ignorant home healther that just nearly kills people and learns lessons from them.
It works. It's balance. #balance.
I would just say that a lot of the variables that Dustin was talking about is the variables that you have to think about with any sort of strength and conditioning program, period. So you're going to be thinking about all these things like injury history, medical history, training age, exposure to different modalities, all those different things when you're building a program. It's no different. And with Stave Off, we have kind of general exercise programs as well as programs that are focusing on a slightly older demographic. And it's the same template. It's just modified for a range of motion and different orthopedic injuries, depending on the person that's in the class. So, you know.
So good. Yeah, it makes total sense. Can you keep going and talk about your PhD? What are you seeing? I don't know what you can actually say, but whatever you can talk about surrounding.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I'm trying to do is start challenging the belief that you can't load medically complex individuals. So the idea for my PhD is that I'm comparing high-intensity resistance training to low-intensity resistance training for individuals who are at risk for mobility limitations or are at risk for the transition into frailty. So with the idea of prevention, I am taking individuals who have markers for frailty, so are labeled as pre-frail based on some of the physical characteristics that are conceptualized with frailty. And I'm putting them into a program where they're squatting, deadlifting, bench pressing, doing heavy rows, all those type of things in like a 2 to 3 sets of 3 to 5 reps at, you know, 80%+ of their one rep max, and comparing that to the 3x10, 3x12, 3x15 exercise prescription and seeing the difference. And so as Dustin and I start teaching the courses, one of the things that we start talking about a lot is this transition into frailty and how physical therapists should be positioning themselves as the providers to be preventing this transition. So when we think about frailty, a lot of times people don't get a ton of exposure to it in their entry-level PT degrees, where they'll kind of know that the definition of frailty is a vulnerability to external stressors that often manifests itself in physical impairments. And there's 5 different physical characteristics that could define it. What we see, though, is that, you know, these types of exercise programs can not only prevent, but can also reverse some of the signs and symptoms of frailty, which include things like slow gait speed, clinical muscular weakness, fatigue and lethargy, you know, unexpected weight loss, all those type of things that are very, very common characteristics that we see in regards to our caseload, especially if we're focused in a geriatric population.
And in terms of the word that I want to use is markers, but I don't think that's actually the word that I want. What's the youngest age that within the studies that you're doing?
So the average age in the research trials that I was doing was mid-70s. So like my average age is 73, 74. But most of my people were, between 65 and I think my oldest individual was 91. So I had a 91-year-old deadlifting and squatting. Yes. And his story was really great because he had a younger new girlfriend who was still doing yoga. Yes. So she was in his 90s. I think she was in her 70s or something. So significantly younger.
Oh, wow.
And one of his motivations for getting into the program was that he was going to try to keep up with her.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't ask very many more questions after that, though. I didn't
want to.
You
got something you didn't
want
to
know. that's all I want to know. That is it. Dude, this is so good. Do you ever, when you're doing these studies and doing this research, do you ever just be like, no shit, like, we know this, and like, is it at all, do you get any kickback from this, or people like, no, this shouldn't be done? Like, I feel like this is a no-brainer, like, yes, we should be doing this. It's just like a better way and more refined way to do it, safer.
Yeah, so when we think about the recommendations that we make, I think there's a lot of examples where we tend to go on the side of conservative until somebody can prove us otherwise. So a common example that's kind of been more teased out in the literature is around breast cancer. So if anyone had, they had lymph node resection, they were told that because of risk for lymphedema, they shouldn't be doing any resistance training and should never be lifting more than 10 to 15 pounds. Mm-hmm. But if we know about the patient population for breast cancer, it tends to be younger, sometimes moms, and moms are kicking back to them and saying, what, you're telling me that I can never lift my child up because I've had breast cancer? Yep. And they refuse to accept it. So the research said, okay, well, we have to see, is this safe? And now the literature is supporting that not only is resistance training safe, that if you're having an active flare-up of lymphedema that you should hold off until it's kind of come down, but that individuals who are involved in, you know, regular resistance training are less likely to experience symptoms of lymphedema at all post-lymph node resection.
Yes.
And so I think we have to do the same thing in the geriatric population, where until we have these studies that are saying that if you want to choose 3x10, that's fine as long as progressive overload is present, but that doesn't mean that 3x5 is bad. And so, you know, we talk about, Dustin and I talk about one rep max living in our courses. And so we really, really strongly believe that, you know, we can load individuals more than we think.
So good. Dustin, pick it up and talk about the courses. That was like a perfect transition, Christina. You're amazing.
I want to bring up just the fact that we do or have gotten a lot of pushback when we do talk about deadlifts, squats, some of these activities really? For folks. I would say initially, like back in 2015, 16, 17 okay. with the podcast. Okay. And one thing that I've noticed and Christina has as well is that so many clinicians, like they know it would be effective there, but they're so concerned about, is it safe? Mm-hmm. So a lot of the question is this actually safe for folks that are, 80, 85, 90, whatever, or with some type of cardiovascular event or with a diagnosis of osteoporosis? And the research is still growing and building. And so what do we do in this kind of in between where we can't say for certain that it is 100% safe, but we do know that as humans it is effective. And so we really try and yeah. talk about risk versus reward. And so I'll speak a little bit to the courses, but Christina mentioned one rep max living. So that is someone that is their physical capacity is at or near the demands of their daily life. So let's say someone can only deadlift 20 pounds, and let's say their laundry basket is 17, 18 pounds. If they're doing laundry regularly, lifting that basket at that percentage of their one rep max, that's a tough place to be in. That's very fatiguing, yeah. Very tiring. And anyone that has, tested their one rep max, like it's tough.
When you put it that way, like, well, shit, right. That's terrible.
It's tough, but it also lends people to a very vulnerable situation. Like Christina mentioned before, where they are at risk for functional decline, for potentially a fall for some folks, or for a lot of people that I work with, at risk for being readmitted into the hospital. And so we really need to think about, we want to keep people safe. We want to, be very thoughtful in our exercise prescription, but we also need to think about the risk of underdosage, the risk of the underdosed seated TheraX routine with that yellow TheraBand. What happens if I continue on with that when I could have been squatting or deadlifting or doing a loaded carry and getting that person, back to their prior level of function or before? Like, their time is of the essence. It can be rather urgent. And so in our course, Modern Management of the Older Adult, we're really trying to paint that picture of who these folks are. And it's a lot of people in several settings, in outpatient orthopedic clinic. You have people come into your clinic, but they may look like they're doing fine walking into the door, but in their day-to-day life, me as a home health therapist, I can tell you a lot of times it's an absolute wreck. They may have a tough time being able to go down the steps into their basement to do their laundry or to work the sweeper or to clean or to mow or all these different things. It's in outpatient orthopedics, it's in SNFs, it's in home health. So how can we really assess these folks to identify risk and that level of urgency, and then how can we modify and scale these activities and exercises to these folks, even in the presence of medication lists of 20 plus meds or the laundry lists of medical diagnoses? So that's kind of the basis of the course and something that we hit super hard on.
Amazing. Christina, please continue and perhaps elaborate on like kind of the nuances or the didactics, the logistics, I guess I should say, of the course. Basically, I want you to promote this so that people go. Tell me more about this.
Well, Dustin and I are making geriatrics sexy, so you should definitely come to our course.
Done. So,
but we have two versions of the course. We have an online version where it's an 8-week course where you have the opportunity, if we're not coming to an area near you, that you can have lectures and labs that go through different areas of aging. So aging physiology, exercise prescription, falls prevention, psychosocial considerations, cognitive decline, et cetera, et cetera. And we meet up every 2 weeks to talk about materials, answer questions, and we act as a resource for you with your caseload as well as you're going through the course. And then you have access to the material for an indefinite amount of time as the new literature comes out and Dustin and I continue to refine the course. And then we have a 16-hour weekend course that is essentially a live rendition of the MMOA course that we've developed. So just the opportunity to work a little bit more hands-on if we're in an area near you.
Lots of deadlifts, squats, loaded carries, floor transfers. The live courses, we typically leave, what would you say on average, Christina, that people in each lab where we do some of these different movements are walking away, maybe we've had somewhere of 5 to 12 PRs in there for squat. Granted, a lot of these folks never do these movements, so the first time is a PR. But it's a pretty cool
who's attending? What's your general demographic that's in attendance?
We actually have a huge range. One of the things that Dustin and I really love about this course is that we have a really nice blend. Like in each course, live and online, we'll have, you know, home health clinicians, acute care, SNF, outpatient orthopedics. Sometimes we have students who are coming in. And when you have people who are coming from different perspectives but are working with the same population, the depth and breadth of the conversation that you get to have about aging in general and your caseload is so, it's so immersive. It's so complete because, you know, the home health clinician, even Dustin and I as co-teachers to this course, I come from a very different perspective, one being a business owner, but also coming in an outpatient orthopedics. I come from research academia. Dustin comes from, you know, SNF, home health. He's done the outpatient orthopedics too.
Killing people.
He comes from the podcast. So he's talked with all these people too. So, you know, we have a really great opportunity to talk to people in different settings and getting insights from PTs in different areas, I think really can help give you, you know, depth to, you know, the aging problems and, you know, some of the things that you're working on in your caseloads.
Absolutely. Let's plug it again real quick. And I'm going to, you guys listening, you know, I always put it in the show notes, but I want you to say it out loud again because some people don't go to the show notes or they don't have it, whatever. What's the name of the course? Where can they find the courses? I guess I should say because it's online and in person.
All right. So it's Modern Management of the Older Adult is the name of the course. It is brought to you by the Institute of Clinical Excellence. So that's the continuing education company that we do this course through. Maybe the easiest place to find this would be at geroshealth.com. And there's a tab that says courses. So geroshealth.com and click on the courses tab and you'll have all the information. If that doesn't tickle your fancy, just hit me up on social media or Christina, send us a message and we can definitely chat about it.
And what are those handles?
Mine is at geroshealth, G-E-R-O-S health. And then Christina.
Yeah, so you can follow me at Christina_Previtt, or you can follow the business at Stave Off.
Stave Off. Spell your last name, Christina.
P-R-E-V-E-T-T.
See, that's why I had her spell it, because I knew you guys were going to spell it with an I. See that? And the second one was Stave Off PT?
No, just Stave Off.
To Stave Off. I'm making things up over here. And Stave Off. So we got Jero's Health. We got Christina_Previtt. We have Stave Off. We have jeroshealth.com. Go check those things out. You have all the information there. I'm not done asking you questions, though, guys. We'll wrap it up in a little bit, but I have a few more questions for you. Just because we're on this kind of continuing education theme, and that's what I do. And I get questions about, like, how did you get into this? How did you do it? So I'm going to flip the question to you guys, whoever wants to answer first. Fine. How'd you get into it? How'd you do it? Any advice you have to people that are maybe thinking about doing it?
Well, I'll let you answer this one, Christina.
Okay. So the funny part was, so Dustin was doing the podcast for probably about, what was it, a year? And he sent out a survey basically asking his listenership and people who are in the Facebook group, what do you guys want from this podcast? And one of the major themes that came out was the need for a continuing education course that was specific to geriatrics. You know, there's a lot of courses out there that kind of touch on this would work with your older adult clients, but they're, and even now I don't really know of any other ones other than our course that is very focused on, you know, the geriatric population. And so Dustin and I met for the first time in person at a conference in Louisville. And he had kind of reached out to Jeff Moore, who owns the Institute of Clinical Excellence, and said, you know, this is what my readership is really looking for. You should do this course. And Jeff said, well, why don't you do this course? And I will support you through ICE. And so Dustin was trying to say, no, I don't need to facilitate.
I am not your guy.
Yeah. So he's like, but I'll ask Christina to do it. And so I remember we were sitting and we were having dinner and he's like, you should do this course. And I said to him, like, I'm not doing this course unless you do it with me. And that was basically the start of this partnership. We talked to Jeff the next week and I'm pretty sure 6 months later, the first online cohort started. So
yeah
that was kind of how we got into it. And I don't know, I can't speak for Dustin, but it has been such a wild ride and I have loved every second of speaking on the podcast and teaching. And I learned so much from our students and it keeps me, you know, accountable to the literature on top of my PhD work. And it's just been such a positive experience. So I couldn't imagine myself not doing it now.
Yeah.
It really is the best, right?
It is.
It really is the best. Plug that podcast, please.
Yeah. So we do the PT on Ice faculty does a daily show. So we do the PT on Ice daily show that has we have a bunch of different faculty members. So Wednesday is Jerry on Ice. So that's when Dustin and I alternate back and forth on the podcast, but we have leadership Thursdays and the prevention Mondays with Pop on Mondays and the fitness athlete Friday. So it's a daily, you know, 15-minute podcast where each of our faculty kind of gets on there and
daily.
Yeah.
Dang.
So that we, we talk about a whole bunch of different things around PT.
Yeah. And that's with the Institute of Clinical Excellence. That's the Con Ed company, PT on Ice daily show. And then Jero's Health is the podcast where we'll kind of dive where it's all mainly working with older adults. So we have different segments where, the first Monday of the month, for example, is specific to the home health clinician. And then the second Monday of the month is mainly about the literature. Third Monday of the month is going to be about people that are working in the skilled nursing facility. And so we have these different segments that really speak to people. And then Christine and I will re-air those PT on Ice episodes every week as well. So we're putting out two episodes a week for folks that do want to, you know, sharpen the sword when you're working with older adults. Is a good place to go.
So much value. Does this exist? I think the answer is no. Anywhere else? Is anyone else doing this?
Well, Jimmy, you know, our boy, Mr. PT Pintcast, I mean, he has a job with Fox Rehab, which is an amazing company, mainly on the East Coast right now, but they're moving, they're taking over the world basically, but they're doing home visits. So it's different from home health. They're billing outpatient or Medicare Part B, but they're going to people's homes. So Jimmy, from what I understand, is, you know, helping out on the media side of things. And they have a podcast called Foxcast and they have different, disciplines. So they have, speech, OT and physical therapy, I believe. So he's doing a good job of speaking to that, but other than us and Jimmy, every once in a while, there's not really, any other voices that I know of, at least.
That's what it seems like. And that's 100% why I was like, I must get them on the podcast so that everyone else can hear about this. Because, you know, collaboration, not competition, you can't be the jack of everything. Right. And I'm like, this is not my wheelhouse. I don't even treat it anymore. So I'm like, let me bring on people that are doing this. And this is awesome. This is absolutely awesome. Before I let you guys go, actually, two questions. I have my general like wrap-up question, but one more before I let you guys go. Dustin, GCS. Talk to me.
Whew. Yeah, so GCS is a geriatric certified specialist. So that there's a love and hate relationship with that. So I took that test, when was that? March of this year. I signed up for it like 2 years ago, and then I kept postponing it because it was really tough to get back into school mode me and to study. But I would say it has been helpful because it forces you to really sharpen up on things that are not sexy, but very significant. And so like medications, for example, urinary incontinence, skin, you know, wound care, things along those lines that I don't really care about whatsoever, but matter to my patients. And so for me to be able to serve them well, like I do need to understand this stuff better. And so, yeah, it definitely puts you in a position to learn a lot of those topics that are important, they're significant, but not necessarily sexy. Because what I tend to gravitate towards are my biases of strength training, power training, you know, functional movement. How do we scale these to older adults? Blah, 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 blah. And that's only a small percentage of that test. So I'd say it has helped, especially with a lot of my folks that are medically complex, that I feel, you know, even more confident in working with them and challenging them appropriately. So yeah, net positive, I think.
Okay, net positive. I like that. For OCS, I'm going to say net negative. Mm. You guys have asked me before. It didn't change anything. It's pretty outdated in terms of the actual material. Mm. And I think that, like, I love that you brought up the comorbidities and medications and the stuff that, like, when you're really in, like, a very typical outpatient orthopedic practice, like, that doesn't come your way. And you're kind of like, why do I have to know all of this in school and looking at all this? So I love that you brought that up for, you know, this is a time when it does come your way. But next question, and you can totally plug yourself, because I am all about working smarter, not harder. And I think that people have a tendency to just take tests and such without necessarily having an actual problem. They're like, oh, this will provide a solution. And I'm like, do you have a problem yet, though? If someone's looking to sharpen their skills, really get into doing things the way that you guys are doing them, what would you say is the best way to do that? And like I said, you can plug yourself.
That's fine. How about you go first, Christina?
Take the modern management course.
Boom, done. That's exactly what I want you to say. Like, yes, like I brought them on for a specific reason. Like, I know that there are people out there that, especially a lot of my new grads, like, the audience is pretty diverse, but any new grads that I have out there, you're going out and everyone finishes school and they look back and like, I don't feel prepared. And, you know, nobody feels prepared. But if you are going into this setting, here's what you can do. Go and learn from people that are doing it, that specialize in it, that are passionate about it. You know, more than anything else, they're passionate about it. They're going to help you through this. It's 8 weeks long, the cohort?
Yeah, the online cohort's 8 weeks.
Right? Like, so if you can't make it to a certain course because of travel, whatever, like, they have so many solutions to you guys, for you guys. So there you go.
Problem. I feel I do. I want to throw my two cents there. Take the course. We would love you to take the course. But I think a big thing for me is really challenging our profession's perception of older adults, you know, just with so many students, new grads, even seasoned clinicians, just how we perceive older adults in terms of, you know, particular stereotypes we have of them, what they are capable of or what they are not capable of. We have so many preconceived assumptions that are just not accurate to reality. And so one big mission for us is to really abolish ageism, like Tim Fox says from Fox Rehab. And so I think one of the best ways, or one way that has been very helpful for me, is just to spend more time around people older than you. So when that patient comes in and, you know, everything in you wants to pass this on to, you know, the other clinician or whatever, you know, staff, like, take that 85-year-old and spend time with them, work with them, try some of these different things of scaling range of motion or weight. Get them on their feet, challenge them, and you will be shocked at what you'll learn just by being around them, talking to them. Because, I mean, these people have been alive for 80, 90 years. Like, that is freaking amazing.
It's amazing.
And you're it's going amazing. To see a lesson that I learned very quickly is that I often got a bigger percentage gain or difference by working with these older adults than I did with the 17 or 18-year-old or the collegiate athlete. Like, these folks respond super well to properly dosed strength training that's progressive a lot of times because they're so deconditioned that they're going to respond very quickly. And you can really be that person that's going to alter the trajectory of their life. So it's a very cool situation that I don't think a lot of people take advantage of enough. So spend more time around older people and you will, I think you'll be better as a result, and take the course as well.
Yes. That's amazing. That's like a mic drop. That was so good, because that's what we do. You get that patient, you have, like, there's just like a handful of patients that come into the clinic and you're like, oh, fibro, I don't want that one.
Right, exactly.
Oh, older person, I don't want that one. Oh, thumb, I don't want that one. Like, that's amazing. Before I let you guys go officially, then, Christina, do you have anything you would like to leave the people with?
That's a good question. No, I'm just that, you know, a lot of times, kind of building off what Dustin said, the people that have been my most rewarding clients have been my older clients that I have been able to achieve a certain level of strength that they're able to pick up their grandchild, or they are able to, you know, walk outside without pain. And for me, like I weightlift, I'm a competitive weightlifter. And so I work with a lot of barbell athletes as well. But for me, the person that's always going to be like my favorite client is that one that, you know, was having back pain every night because they have to take care of their grandkid who's 30 pounds and they can't pick 30 pounds up. And then I'm able to get them to that level of strength and they don't have back pain anymore, because that is life, like life altering, life changing.
Yeah. You change their life.
Yeah.
That's what people get into this profession for. To be like, we get into this because we want to help. And that's why we're like scared to promote our own courses. We're like, I just want to help you. Like, it's true. Like, that is it. You guys listening, so many bombs dropped, and just you can hear the passion in their voices, which is one of the reasons I love doing a podcast, because you really get to hear people. A lot of it can be lost with social media and the short clips and things like that, but they give you so many resources. They are all linked in the show notes. So please go there, follow them on social media, reach out to them on social media, take their class, listen to the podcast, and let's get rid of ageism.
Boom.
No need. Let's get rid. You guys, thank you so much for joining. Like, this was awesome. Christina, Doc McFunkin, I know you're busy. Different time zones here. Thank you. That's your name from now on.
Okay, I got you.
Thank you guys so, so, so very much for joining. Honestly.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you. I'm screwing up your outro, but I just want to say thank you for how you're leveraging social media and just you're changing how people interact online. Like, you're influencing folks to be more authentic and real and just kind of share other side to themselves, especially in the professional spheres, which I've been really intrigued by that. Just kind of observing and watching on Instagram and just seeing you grow. So yeah, kudos to you and what you're doing. Keep grinding. And it's cool to see how you're influencing patterns and behaviors of other people in our profession online. So it's cool to see.
I appreciate that. I'm cutting that whole part out because I messed up the outro, but I appreciate that, my dude, truly. You guys listening, this is a great episode. Go back, listen to it one more time. Take notes. It's in the show notes just in case. Connect with people. That's what I'm all about. Doc McFunkins was just talking about that. I'm all about connection. So if you're like, I'm still confused, I still have more questions, reach out to them. All right?
Do it.
Movement unites us all. Mm. You guys listening, thank you. I know you could have been doing anything and you chose to listen to us. And then for that, I am endlessly, endlessly appreciative. I'm not going to ask you for any likes, not going to ask you for a follow, subscription, anything like that. If you like this episode, I want you to go to Instagram and check out Geros Health, G-E-R-O-S Health, and see what they're up to. All right. All right, officially wrapping up this time. Until next time, friends, Doc McFunkins, Christina, and Maestro,
we out.